And we're back with an all-new quarantine edition of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Virus Vertel.
I'm Aida Osman, patching in from home.
just so you all know, we did brave coming into Crooked Media to record this podcast, except for Aida, because she's sick. So she's staying
home.
Yeah,
I'm sick. And
Louis and I are also a very safe distance from each other, but we do that every week.
Right.
Yeah, they always sit that far apart.
This is how I protect myself, you understand.
Yes.
No, but we are like feet from each other. When we're in the big studio at Crooked, it's always shocking how far away you are from the people you're allegedly having a close conversation with while you're here. So anyway, if the dynamic is off, blame it on that.
It's because Tommy, John, and John hate each other.
No, right. Oh, we can't just say that on air.
Well.
I think that we can pick that up in their voices in the podcast.
That's true.
We sure can.
Well, John Lovett drives the wedge with those Zumba pants of his.
Oh, no.
We are here, you know, surviving, doing things. What have y'all been up to this past week?
Well, I am getting used to the fact that I am definitely 100% an extrovert. Like, as I sit here talking to you, I realize how much of myself I am not while I am sitting in captivity.
The amount of Instagram lives I've been doing have revealed the same to me.
No, exactly. No, we all are suddenly Clarissa, needing to explain the whole situation to everybody constantly.
Like, hey, ask me questions. What? Sure.
I don't mean this. I think a lot of my personality has been received, like performing in any way. And even if that means conversationally, and now that I don't have anyone to do that with, I don't know who I am.
Mm.
Right. No, I feel the same way. I'm regaining my identity as I sit here and speak. Because there are times when you realize, oh, wait, I haven't heard myself talk in 8 hours. Oh, now it's 10 hours. You know, like I value my last few potentially Starbucks interactions for that reason. Like, oh, I heard myself say coffee.
So you're still going to Starbucks?
I go at hours when I think nobody else will be there, and it's actually worked out for me.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
I might head to Starbucks later today. Well, what have I been doing? I'm still watching Alex Garland movies.
Okay.
I just watched Annihilation. Annihilation blew my mind.
Annihilation is great.
Yeah, but I didn't even mean to. I think I was just on the flow of watching one-word movies that start with an A. I watched Adaptation.
Oh, amazing movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, these are weirdly related, and it's very much so about this kind of like biological and evolution. They were linked on accident, but I wonder how much Alex Garland was a fan of Charlie Kaufman or something like that. But yeah, so I'm just trying to watch movies and catch up. I know who Tim Roth is now. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot.
An Education starring Aida.
100%.
Annihilation, I actually did not love that movie. Well, first of all, controversially, from a gay perspective, I'm not a Natalie Portman stan. She doesn't pick projects that are particularly interesting to me. That's just the life I live.
Where is the taste?
I know.
Once again, Louis Vertel.
And also, constitutionally, I am a fan of Jennifer Jason Leigh, and I find her bad in that movie.
Mm.
She was so dry in that movie, and I know that was her character's affect, but it really didn't feel correct. Like,
yes.
It didn't feel like the right choice. I would say that about Gina Rodriguez and who else was in the movie? Tessa Thompson, too. Like, the characters just felt not fully formed. But I liked the storyline. The plot was really good.
Where it goes is twisted and warped enough, but I had a friend who told me in the middle of last year that Gina Rodriguez would be nominated for an Oscar for that. I apparently just have demented friends because she's in it for, what, like 13 minutes altogether?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that was insane at the time.
Yeah.
And insane in retrospect.
No, we knew it. I knew how I would count it.
Can you imagine that Oscar speech?
Hit it, Ira. Hit it.
What have you been consuming this week, Louis?
Well, first of all, I find myself strangely having a lot of faith in what Amazon Prime just throws at me. I'm surprised to be so submissive to Amazon Prime. They throw things at me and I just watch them.
Their algorithm is, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'll be like, watch this. And it doesn't even have the same level of Netflix where it seems to have creepily known what I'm into.
Yeah.
Like Amazon Prime is just like, here's a movie from 1984. that is on our database.
Right, exactly. They're, maybe the shock value of it is supposed to woo me. Yeah. But, for example, one movie they threw at me was The Last Waltz, which is a documentary, a music documentary, about the band The Band when they broke up ceremoniously in 1976. And they put on one last concert where all of their friends showed up, and their friends are Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Mavis Staples and legend, Neil Young. Mm. And it's maybe the most legendary music documentary of all time.
Well, I mean, my favorite documentary about The Band is Making the Band Season 2.
Oh, right. Yes, the same.
The Band.
And now, nothing about this movie is something I would want to watch. There's no female protagonist. I mean, the biggest female star in it is Joni Mitchell, and she has one song from, I'll say it, her most off-the-rails, well, not most off-the-rails album, just an album I don't listen to. But
the one with the blackface cover?
That album is right after this one.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was edifying to watch, and I wouldn't have watched it under any other circumstances, really. And that, I hope, is a blueprint for how I handle the rest of this quarantine is, all right, watch things you wouldn't have had time for otherwise. And there are a couple of other things I've watched. I watched this movie, Farewell, My Lovely, which is a Raymond Chandler detective adaptation from the mid-70s that is note for note, exactly what you expect it to be, with a supporting performance from a batty old woman that got nominated for a supporting actress Oscar, Sylvia Miles. I miss when we nominated more people like that, like disheveled women who talk about their drunken heyday. I need more roles like that. Helen Hazen, Airport, look these things up. And then I rewatched Lady Bird. I think it's important to rewatch things, too. Validate in your mind the things you love.
Of course.
I want to watch that again. I definitely want to watch that one again.
So speaking of Sylvia Miles, you know I watched She-Devil.
Right. Oh, my God. Yes. We're connected on Sylvia Miles. Wow.
I watched She-Devil and Death Becomes Her for the first time this week to finally educate myself and to solve this debate of which Meryl movie is better.
These are both Meryl's daffy comedies that she did in the late 80s and early 90s, that, which were okay, strictly...
I remember She-Devil. Which are somehow, She-Devil, I remember.
Which I guess are just connected because of the time frame.
Yeah.
Because they have really nothing in common with one another.
No. One is a very kind of a conventional romp, She-Devil, and then Death Becomes Her is this twisted pseudo-inspection of our vanity, etc.
It's Robert Zemeckis doing White Almodovar.
Sure. Yes.
It is
the grotesqueness.
It is lush. It's soap operatic as well. Borrows a lot from the genre and just really just sort of has a sort of verve and like ambiance to it, which is fun. She-Devil, on the other hand, is abysmal.
Yeah. Do you think Meryl is good in it?
I think Meryl is good in it, but I think she's better in Death Becomes
Her. I disagree. I think Meryl is more... Okay, here's the deal with the movie She-Devil.
It has no jokes in it, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No,
I know
it's
you
all...
said that Death Becomes Her has like five memorable lines, which I disagree with because I was laughing at every line in it. She-Devil really has no jokes in it. It's like no comedy writer was working on that script. It's just matter-of-fact lines.
Well, the weird thing about She-Devil is that it's a movie starring Roseanne, who, of course, was just beginning her sitcom at the time, and it's a role that seems written for her. Like, she's this resentful, like, downtrodden, everyday suburban woman, but she's also bad. So it's the lead performance is all wrong, which sets that movie on the wrong track.
And she gives voiceover, and it's so monotonous and awful.
Yeah, right. It's very strange. But Meryl is playing such a broad comic role that, by the way, could have gone to any number of actresses of that time. It could have been a Bette Midler role. It could have been a Lily Tomlin role, whatever. But she proves that when she wants to, she dips into her, like, Marx Brothers level broad comedy bag and can dominate on that level, too. I just think it's a movie that's essential to understanding Meryl Streep. And
well, it's her first comedy role. It's from the director who did Desperately Seeking Susan, which is a shocker to me because that's an actual good movie.
Well, you were really wronged by this.
Yes, and I just think that after her first comedy role where she like really goes for gusto at it, I think that she just improves on it and Death Becomes Her. I think Goldie Hawn gives her more... and Bruce Willis give her more to play against than Ed Begley Jr.
Yeah.
In She-Devil, who is generally great, but like it has nothing to do in this movie. And also, Roseanne and Meryl Streep for a poster that makes you think that like they're versus each other over him, they never interact in the movie.
That's true.
So that's another problem with it.
Wow. I was crying, by the way.
Linda Hunt was
lovely in it, though. Yeah, I was going to say, guys, this is getting very deep. Are you guys only watching movies? Is this what's going on?
Yeah.
Since we've been locked up, have you been watching movies obsessively too?
I've been watching movies. I watched The End of the Century last night too for the first time.
I'm trying to consume TV shows, but something about that feels like it's unending, and I need large things to consume right now. I just think the nature of what I'm consuming is an interesting thing to talk about as well.
One, I watch a lot of TV in general, and I feel like it's just so unending. I mean, I am currently watching Twin Peaks for the first time, which only has two seasons, and then there's The Return. So, like, that at least feels more finite, but, like, sitting down to watch a 7-season, 8-season show for me feels like we're never leaving our houses, ever.
It feels goofy, yeah. And Joel Kim Booster tweeted for us to watch The Good Wife, and you guys had talked about it on the last podcast, so I was going to start it. But now that feels like a hopeless endeavor. I don't know if I'm going to make it through.
No, I actually totally agree. I just want things to end. I mean, it's nice to feel like you've accomplished something, right? Like gotten to the end of something.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go through this whole quarantine process and only watch 8 seasons of a TV show, even one...
What did you do?
Where Juliana Margulies is smirking at you the whole time. I just feel like you feel underaccomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And for me, like, Twin Peaks feels like the 2 seasons, like, were very complete because it was canceled. Yeah. So it feels like I can at least accomplish that and get my TV fix, but also tap into this David Lynch part of history that has been a bought in spot forever. And obviously, as a fan of soap operas, Twin Peaks is excellent. Having watched so many things, quote unquote, inspired by Twin Peaks, I feel like people only ever picked up on the kookiness and the weirdness when they replicate it. And I have yet to really see something that, like, explores, like,
the humanity crime, of that actual
humanity,
show, yeah.
Or, like, soap, melodrama, circ sort of vibe of Twin Peaks. Like, no one goes for that. They always go for, like, here's a premonition, or here's like a character dancing weird.
And yeah.
Like, that's not the show.
Right, right. There's
It's an affect.
More to it. That reminds me, and we'll kind of get into this when we talk about Fiona Apple. Something I love during this time is just becoming obsessed with celebrity interviews and Piper Laurie, who was on that show in a very interesting role. I've just watched her interviews again and again and again. It's just, I like locking into a personality and hearing their perspective on anything. So that to me is very comforting during a time like this, just listening to somebody who knows what they're talking about and whose work you're a fan of. So I will, we'll get more into that during the Fiona Apple segment, but she in particular.
That's a smart suggestion. That is a smart suggestion. I've gone down a Bill Hader hole because I'm just so appreciative of between him and Fred Armisen and their ability to do impressions and funny voices and just be hysterical all the time. You kind of get into this. It's like having a friend when you watch all their interviews. It's like doing a character study or a person study, but it's like hanging out with them, you know?
I feel like interviews are my version of podcast listening. Like, I don't do it as much as I should because I would rather just have one person unspool and talk about their lives.
All right, we're going to get through this episode as best as we can, right? We have some voice memos sent in from listeners who are going to tell us what they are watching during their quarantine. So that should be fun.
Hopefully. We'll see how cute your responses are. I can't guarantee it will be fun because I don't know what you said. So,
And then we're going to talk about everything in Hollywood closing during this coronavirus outbreak. And we're also going to dig into Emily Nussbaum's profile of Fiona Apple.
Beautiful.
Which I found very intriguing.
Me too.
All right. We'll be right back. The surprise of no one, coronavirus came from movie theaters last week. Cinemas are entirely closed in 32 or more markets overseas and partially closed in another 15 territories. Theaters in New York and LA were closed by their mayors, and since the CDC recommends no gatherings of more than 50 people, more cities are expected to follow suit, which means that Margot Robbie is about to win for Birds of Prey.
Do not count out Betty Gilpin in The Hunt.
No.
Issa Rae in The Photograph. and Elizabeth Moss in Invisible Man.
The four performances we had this year will be nominated. Yes.
Yes.
And, this is such a shame.
I feel like they'll admit animated movies in this year, too. So, like, Will Smith, Spies in Disguise.
Maybe the Oscars should be four times a year, just anyway, to point out how ridiculous our release scheduling is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be quarterly.
I managed, before quarantine happened, to see The Hunt, actually.
Still haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Yeah. I mean, it's been out for only a few days.
Yeah.
So.
But I really think, I mean, I'll do it for Emma and I'll do it for Invisible Man, but Universal is out their damn mind if they think I'm spending money on The Hunt. I'm really not. Was it good?
I loved it. I thought that Betty Gilpin was great. Really gives sort of a visceral performance. Much, much different from Glow. So, a versatile actress.
Now, tell me what that movie is exactly about, because I sort of understand it.
Okay, so these elites, I don't want to ruin the twist so much, but mm-hmm. like these elites get conservatives who they think are like racist, homophobic, conspiracy theorists, and sort of gather them up and drop them in a field and start hunting them.
Got it.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And let them get access to weapons and things, and then it goes awry. Betty Gilpin is one of those people.
So we're in our own dystopia, but if you want an escape to another dystopia, go to that one. Okay, great.
Yes.
If you're trying to layer up on the sadness right now and the existential dread.
It's actually just very funny.
Thank God.
Is it kind of like screwball-y, or is it trying to give
It's a bit screwball-y. There are some jokes that try to give some political commentary that sort of fall flat. I mean, I think if you pulled the politics out of the movie, it'd be even better. But I really enjoyed it. And the last half hour, the third act is just pure gay camp.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Unexpected. Well, it also sounds to me, in the initial description of it, it sounds to me like a Shirley Jackson short story. Mm-hmm. You know, haunting, and there's a theme.
The
but
lottery.
You're saying the best of it is not that.
No.
Yeah, got it.
It also reminds me of The Most Dangerous Game by Richard Connell.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, that has been sort of a blueprint for so many people hunting people movies.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird to have one now, but I guess it's appropriate now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I think it feels on theme. Yeah.
Yes. But I am excited to see at least the Universal movies that are being released. I wish that they would be releasing, you know, like No Time to Die or Mulan, but I guess they really want to wait till people are back in theaters for that.
I am sad to say that the first time this whole thing became quote-unquote serious to me, or like I might have to rearrange my life in some way, was when I learned that No Time to Die would be delayed months and months. I was like, wait a minute, somebody knows something I don't.
And Fast and the Furious 9. A year.
Something, that's when it hit you?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's when it hit Louis Aina.
You know...
this Bond movie's not coming out. Whew, this must be serious.
Well, it just
getting real.
It's one of those things where if they do that, that must mean, oh, people won't be going outside or to places. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, but speaking of people not going outside or to places, we're not the only ones under quarantine at the moment. It is... Also, our listeners who are practicing the social distancing, as it were. I'm starting to hate that phrase, by the way.
I know.
Well, it's the only, it's like one of those things where it's definitely going to be word of the year or whatever, you know.
Times word of the year. The person of the year is social distancing.
And I've seen every instance of a distance-related meme. I guess we'll be bringing back the movie Going the Distance soon. One of Drew Barrymore's more underrated performances. Maybe that's a good thing.
Or... I can go the distance.
Yep, uh-huh. There's only like four things with distance in it. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are breaking free
there you
of
go.
Society.
Thank you so much.
That was the Ariana song. I meant to reference Breaking Away, the movie, but the faggot jumped out. Anyway, we invited our listeners to send us in voice memos of what they were up to while they're stuck at home. So we're going to listen to a few. Our first one is from Caleb.
Hi, this is Caleb calling from Nova Scotia. I'm currently self-isolating, and I'm actually watching 6 Feet Under for the first time since high school. And I've got to say, it's one of the best TV series that I've ever seen in my life. I really wish that it got the same attention that something like The Wire or The Sopranos gets, because I think it's truly one of HBO's best shows start to finish, like season 1 to season 5. It's awesome. So that is my recommendation. I'd love to hear what you guys think about the show if you've seen it already.
Take it away, boys. I've never seen this.
Have you not seen this, Aida?
Not at all.
Okay, well, first of all, Caleb, I know what you're talking about because people didn't watch The Wire when it was on. People watched The Wire in retrospect, but I feel like 6 Feet Under got a slew of Golden Globes.
Yes, but I think what he's saying is you are likely to be pressured to watch The Wire now, whereas 6 Feet Under as a sort of an urgent viewing doesn't happen as much.
It's too gay, it's too like soapy for some people.
I think also its impact or its legacy is mostly the insanity and brilliance of its finale as opposed to what actually happens during the show. And I think people only have a vague sense of what the show is like. They know where it takes place.
Yeah, give me, what's it about?
Well, so it's the Fisher family, their patriarch, their father, runs a funeral home and he dies in a car crash in the opening of the pilot. And the family sort of has to gather together and deal with this crisis. And basically the rest of the series is almost procedural-esque in that each episode starts with a death and a fade to white, and then they're planning that funeral each episode.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's really just a family drama that's sort of like a little twisted and a little Lynchian, a little shades of Twin Peaks now that I've seen it. And it is told through the device of their running a funeral home.
Right.
Is Caleb correct? Should I and the other key listeners watch the show?
Oh, it is one of the best fucking TV shows that's ever been on the air.
And also, it's such a good education in actors who go undiscussed, like James Cromwell, who we always talk about in the context of Babe. Farmer Hoggett is excellent on 6 Feet Under.
I don't talk about Babe that much.
It holds up. And by the way, it's short, which is what I love in a Best Picture nominee.
Pig in the City is better.
When people say that, I'm like, no, it's not. That movie is demented.
Yeah. It does what the other girls aren't doing.
No, it's people wanting to congratulate themselves for liking the movie that goes for something crazy and is half successful. It's just, it's a movie that's more interesting to discuss than watch, if you ask me. But moving on, Rachel Griffiths, who's in this show, who was also on Brothers and Sisters, she gave one of my favorite Oscar-nominated performances of the 90s. If you saw the movie Hillary and Jackie, which is about the cellist Jacqueline Dupre, who died of MS... it's just a wonderful movie, and she plays opposite Emily Watson, who's just one of the great actors, who's luckily had a big moment on Chernobyl recently.
I would love to see a Hillary and Jackie about Hillary Clinton visited by the ghost of
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where I thought you were going.
No, that does, when you say the names Hillary and Jackie, it does feel like a loaded title.
Immediately. It's dripping with First Lady, yes.
Yeah, or like
but no, okay.
Jackie Joyner Kersee. And
Hillary from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Right.
I want to see that movie.
Right. You'd get a lot of amazing fingernails in that movie, I think.
Yes, yes. Mm. The cuticles would be popping. All right.
Let's play another one.
This one is from Julie.
Hi, this is Julie from DC. The piece of culture I've been most excited to consume so far is definitely Harry Styles' Tiny Desk Concert. It's only 20 minutes long, but if you watch it several times, you can kill a couple of hours. Ira, please don't tell me to keep it.
First of all, DC, shout out. Second of all, that was my keep it this week. That's unfortunate. She really done just sweeped in and took my keep it, her first time on the podcast.
Wow.
Well, look.
Well, we don't often let our listeners join in, so to be fair.
Yeah, so they can have this. I'll figure it out in the next 10 or 20 minutes. What am I to keep? I'm sure I can find something to be mad about.
What is your keep it? To little Harry Styles.
No, my keep it was like a sarcastic keep it, you know, like it should be longer. I need it for my mental health, blah, 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 you know, but I'm just really irritated that she beat me to it. But she's correct. That Tiny Desk is something to watch over and over again. However, I don't think it's out to the public yet. So maybe that's the keep it.
Also, she only said for Ira not to tell her to keep it. She said nothing about you. So I think this is all
inbounds.
Oh,
true. Well, Ira, aren't you a Harry Styles fan?
Yeah, I'm a stylist. Is that what they're called?
They might be called stylers, but I'm not in the know anymore.
It could even be a hair stylist based on the wording of the word Harry.
Mm, let's see Harry Styles on a remake of Shampoo.
Mm. No, we shouldn't. Actually, you know what?
Yeah, no, I just...
Silhouette-wise, he does have a Warren Beatty thing kind of going on at the moment. All right.
See?
I was going to say also, though, a friend and I were recently talking about how he joined Stevie Nicks on stage for that cover of Stop Dragging My Heart Around, which is one of the great Stevie Nicks solo songs.
When she thought he was in NSYNC?
Which is fair. Stevie Nicks is too busy hanging out in Sedona. Don't ask her about what Harry Styles is up to.
Anyway, Julie, I love Harry Styles, so I'm not going to tell you to keep it. And I've not watched it yet, though.
I generally speaking, love Tiny Desk concerts.
I do, yeah.
I've watched Amy Mann's 100 times.
Megan Thee Stallion's is
They're
my
amazing.
Recent favorite.
Yeah.
Meg, Anderson Paak, and Tyler, the Creator are my two favorite performances. Oh, and T-Pain. T-Pain will floor you if you've seen that Tiny Desk.
Yes, Tallahassee Pain.
T-Pain, by the way, when he's doing his, he seems so shocked to be there and so grateful for the opportunity. And then he sings and has everybody in the palm of his hand the whole time. It's very notable. That's probably the most notable Tiny Desk definitive concert.
Which is not safe at the moment. You should not be in the palm of anyone's hand.
That's right. Stay alive.
100%. Yeah. Good catch.
Let's roll another one. And this one coming up is from Madison.
Listen, American Idol is fire this season. Katy Perry is awesome. Survivor, also. Come on, Boston Rob got voted off. Who couldn't watch Winners at War?
I am positive with saying that American Idol is not fire this season.
Well, here's the deal with American Idol. I think it could be fire. I watched it as recently as two seasons ago. And just the fact is, the thing that American Idol is always trying to conquer is that the fervor over a star being born, we've just experienced that now hundreds of times on various shows. That's been the format of all reality TV for so long.
We used to be waiting for a moment like this.
Yeah.
And now we get a moment like this every other week.
Right. Yes. That's the problem. So
the marginal return is not high anymore. Now I don't care. Now I don't care at all.
Also,
even have to win to do well. You just have to be on it and we have to like you.
Yeah. But at this point, like, not enough people are watching for you to even like do well if you've been on it. There's so many artists, I feel like, who I hear a song from them and I'm like, oh, they're really good. And someone's like, oh, they were like on The Voice. I'm like, really? None of us, that's not part of their narrative anymore. Not really for the general public.
It's easy to forget, yeah. Speaking of Katy Perry, though, guys, I don't hate the song Never Worn White.
Oh,
I don't hate it.
I think it's dreadful. And I love her. I love Katy Perry, but I just don't enjoy that song.
I think the chorus is shockingly memorable for being so volume level, drippy, and slow.
I think it wants to be an R&B song that's not sung by Katy Perry.
Which is how I feel about Genie in a Bottle, secretly an R&B song that should have been sung by Toni Braxton, even though I love Genie in a Bottle.
I haven't been a Katy Perry fan in a while. I have a hard time liking her music anymore.
Oh, well, I liked the last song.
You're talking about Never Really Over?
Yeah.
I liked Small Talk, too, written by Charlie Puth.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie does what he has to do.
He recently released on Instagram a quick cover of Mariah Carey where his voice kind of goes there to the old school Mariah place. And I just want to say that it sounds both good and terrifying. Why can he do that? It's not a comfortable listen for me.
Because Charlie Puth is the moment.
He's not, though. People aren't really into him, even though he is supremely talented.
I love him. I would lick that blade in his eyebrow.
Okay, great. I can't believe you said that. Should I leave the studio really fast or like supersonically
fast?
I'm
hanging up. Not the Charlie Puth eyebrow scar. No.
Not currently during the coronavirus scare. Although, honestly, I would be quarantined with Charlie Puth.
No one asked. I mean, you're answering a problem that no one has posed.
Okay, well... Charlie.
Well, this is my thing with Charlie. Charlie's hot. He's hot. He really is. But he's that pop machine. And he knows it, too. And he's vocal about it. I think that's why he lacks charisma to us.
Oh, you find him a little overly cocky in how he displays his talent?
I feel like he's a lot like Lewis.
In what way?
Well, I mean...
We're both scathingly hot. That I understand.
No, I would say that the way that he knows... pop music, like inside and out, is almost sort of, you know, like robotic in the way that you sort of like know like facts and like culture and things. Because, like, he can tell you a certain song's chords or why a song was popular, or like he just knows that information about music and then he churns it into his music. You know, his music weirdly feels less. His music
is. He's got big Berkeley kid energy.
Yeah. His music is good. And great even, but I would never describe his music as overly emotional because it feels like he is putting out code.
Yeah, coming from the place of an algorithm.
Yeah.
Actually, unfortunately, I have to agree with everything you just said. He is the sense of somebody who knows what he's talking about, knows pop music.
Yeah, I love him.
Let's move right along.
Did you guys notice that she mentioned Boston Rob from Survivor?
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Are you watching this season?
Survivor this season is
No.
Excellent.
You're watching it this season?
Yes, it's excellent. And if anybody is a week behind on Survivor, I don't know why, because you haven't had anywhere to go. And
right, no excuse.
Two, I didn't spoil it. She did. But this is a fantastic season, and I've been really invigorated by Matt Rogers is starting Survivor for the first time, and he just watched Game Changers on Instagram.
Game spelled G-A-Y-M-E.
Yeah, so, people are getting into Survivor still. I enjoy that.
Well, it is a show where you can pop in every 3 years or 7 years or whatever, and usually it's worth it because it's a very consistent show, more than any other reality show.
Usually it's worth it, and someone that you've seen from a previous season is probably back for like a redemption or an All-Star or something like that.
I love it. This season's delicious.
Is Parv back?
Yes, she is.
Oh, okay, good.
And Sandra.
Oh, I love Sandra too.
Queen stays the queen. And this one is from Micah.
So my activity while social distancing is to watch all of the films in which Meryl Streep was nominated for. Four movies in, it's already dark. I'm only 30 minutes into Out of Africa, and it's not going well. This movie is 2 years long, and I've been trying to encourage myself by saying, hey, Defending Your Life is coming up next, only to find out that she wasn't nominated for that. So, it's dark.
Wow. I mean, this person is speaking my national anthem right now.
First of all, was that Gerald Levert? That silky voice, Micah.
Yeah.
I will say about watching Meryl Streep's nominated performances, if he's doing them sequentially, he's hit a couple that are more boring than they should be, namely The French Lieutenant's Woman, in which she and Jeremy Irons play period roles and then modern roles where they're actors playing those roles. It's not that captivating a movie. But Sophie's Choice, amazing. Unfortunately, Out of Africa, I would say, is the worst movie for which she is nominated for an Oscar. It is incredibly boring. This is shocking because it won Best Picture in 1985. Here's trivia that doesn't matter. Klaus Maria Brandauer, who was nominated for a supporting actor.
Iron Lady?
Up there. I mean, the Iron Lady is at least bearably shorter. Mm. But about Klaus Maria Brandauer, the only supporting nominee ever to be nominated for playing a dual role. He plays brothers in that movie. But anyway, you are just waiting for an action scene in that movie. You're waiting for Meryl to interact with another goddamn lion or whatever, and you don't get it.
I would actually argue that, I mean, I really do not like Bridges of Madison County, and that movie is never ending.
It's way too long. And by the way, the kids in that movie, her kids, are the worst actors ever in a Meryl Streep movie. I am so sorry if you were listening to this, but you did a bad job. It's not my fault.
You know what is a shocking one I watched recently? Ironweed. I enjoyed it.
She is amazing in that movie, and so is Jack Nicholson. There are only two movies, if I'm not mistaken, where if you add up the Oscar wins of the lead two performers, you get six. Can you name the other one? Because Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep, 3 + 3 = 6. Can you name the other one?
Girl, I don't know. Is it Something's Gotta Give?
Great guess. The answer is another Jack Nicholson, Meryl Streep movie, which is Heartburn.
Mm. Well, luckily, Micah will be getting to adaptation soon. I don't know when.
Adaptation slays.
Yes.
Yeah, Adaptation is a good movie. And then, well, I think if I were to do this, I would go backwards. I mean, I don't know if I can bear. I'll watch the Best Picture one that you said, Out of Africa, even though it sounds to be boring. I want to see Into the Woods as soon as possible. So, and The Devil Wears Prada.
You know what? Watch Music of the Heart. That is a wacky movie with Meryl Streep from Wes Craven.
Correct.
And it has a banger song from it, Gloria Estefan and NSYNC, called Music of the Heart.
Which was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes.
And also,
I know you are laughing, Aida, but all of this actually happened. Gloria Estefan, NSYNC, Wes Craven, Meryl Streep.
I'm terrified.
All together,
I have to watch this
one joint.
Also, it's
Music of the Heart.
It's worth noting that, so Meryl Streep is nominated for an Oscar for Music of the Heart. That role was originally for Madonna, who dropped out due to quote-unquote creative differences with Wes Craven. If you can turn a Madonna role into an Oscar-nominated role, what you deserve is the Nobel Prize.
Whoa.
So congrats to Meryl for that.
And we have one last one from Catherine.
Hey, y'all. This is Catherine in Austin. In terms of my culture consumption at this crazy time, I have two things to share. One, so I'm in Austin, Texas, where Queer Eye is currently filming their new season, and some of the boys are quarantined here in the building with me. So that's been a fun little, you know, reprieve, and my dog is obsessed with JVN. So, you know, trying to social distance myself there, but it's hard. And number two, the content that I am currently in love with is Nashville. I thought it would be very tacky and a little like too dynasty. Sorry, Ira. But y'all, Connie Britton's hair in it is incredible. Hayden Pan, I don't know how to say her last name, is surprisingly delightful. It's hitting all the notes. It's trashy. It's fabulous. It's actually like surprisingly decent music, but Connie Britton's hair, it's what's going to get us through this time. Okay, thanks so much. Hope everyone stays healthy. Bye.
That woman sounded way too smart not to know how to pronounce Panettiere, but I'll allow it.
Yeah, I was so confused.
Also, while you're busy dragging Dynasty, Nashville has two good seasons, so enjoy 3 through 6.
Look, and this woman said sorry to you, and you still came for her. Like, what can we do to be safe out here?
Nothing.
She said sorry.
Me and Dynasty, me and the Keratons were thick as thieves.
I also love how she sort of confided in us that it's hard for her not to, I guess, attack the members of Queer Eye. They're just lingering around her.
I mean, she should let her dog loose on a couple.
Stop.
I'm not mentioning any names, Aida. You don't even know who I'm talking about.
And hey, look, I'm not mentioning any names neither, okay?
Also, it's notable about the show Nashville. That's the only other credit I know of the actress Judith Hogue, who is April in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, and I constantly think about her because in that movie she was, and she played like a hard-bitten reporter, she was 22 years old. It is very shocking.
Yes. All Girl Fridays should be 22 years old.
Oh, you think that should be a law? Yeah.
Yeah.
Roz Russell, constantly 57 in everything she ever did.
Anyway, I'm sorry for coming for you for Nashville. Enjoy it. It's lovely for a bit. Until it isn't. And watch, I thought she was about to say Robert Altman's Nashville too.
Which, by the way, would have been crazy if she did, because that means we have mentioned 3 of the 4 movies in which actresses were nominated for Best Supporting Actress in 1975, which are Farewell My Lovely, Shampoo, and Nashville. Only one other one, which is Jacqueline Suzanne's Once Is Not Enough, which is terrible. We don't have to bring it up, but now we have.
Let's pretend we didn't. when we're back, we're going to dive into this Fiona Apple interview. On Monday morning, the New Yorker gave us a brief respite from the all-consuming COVID in the form of a long-form interview with Fiona Apple ahead of the release of her new album, Fetch the Bolt Cutters. Written by Emily Nussbaum, the interview touched on her early success, the state of her mental health then and now, the toll of her public relationships, and featured a number of her closest friends. I found it extraordinary.
But not like, mechanical.
Yeah,
yes.
not mechanical.
Or machinery. Anyway, that was an extraordinary machine joke about.
Yeah. Obviously, we're going to talk about a lot of the people who are mentioned in the profile as well, you know, from King Princess to Jeffrey Epstein, Woody Allen, Paul Thomas Anderson, Louis C.K. But first, what did we all think of the profile?
I mean, I love reading it. I was just talking earlier about how there's something about letting one very well-spoken, very individualistic person talk and talk, a celebrity we all trust, just go off. And for that reason, I was super invested. I just find her fascinating anyway. Her career is so fascinating because, for one thing, if you're looking at just the album, she really has had a flawless run. I mean, her music is distinct. It's singer-songwriterly while also being bluesy while also being confessional. She has a one-of-a-kind voice. I've loved her ever since Tidal. She's obviously had something of a renaissance recently because Criminal was so prominently featured in the movie Hustlers.
Mm-hmm.
I love the song Fast As You Can.
J-Lo's impact.
Quite. So I just, and I was so rooting for her during that time when her record label wouldn't put out her album, and then finally she got Extraordinary Machine out, and people were fucking obsessed with it. Just what a cosmic, poetic justice that was.
Yeah.
So to hear from her now at a surprise moment when I didn't expect to hear from Fiona Apple is exactly why it feels so medicinal. I find her so one of a kind and also hilarious. I love when people just, yes, by the way, are also hilarious.
I think, Lewis, you really covered everything that I really felt about this. I hadn't thought about Fiona Apple in so long. So to hear she would, of all people, be the person to pop up in during a pandemic and be the most warming and comforting force that I've exposed myself to in a while. Everything she does is poetic. She's kind of just like a poetic person, but aware and kind of like self-aware and can joke about that. But her lyrics, I remember the first time as a kid when I heard Shadow Boxer, and it was just not the same. I was not the same after that. Fiona Apple is one of the best artists of all time. I would fight anyone who says otherwise.
No, I really enjoy title, but I didn't really discover Fiona Apple until college, when surprisingly it was like the Black theater kids at Loyola like were listening to Extraordinary Machine, and I was like, I had knew Criminal, you know, and I had known Shadow Boxer as well, and like a couple other songs from Win the Pawn, but that I was just like, this is an album.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I have some memory of Kanye West saying he considered Fiona Apple one of his biggest influences. I think she's one of those people who we feel like hits the demo that, you know, all 90s chick music only hits, which is to say me. But I think her impact is way more far-reaching than people give her credit for.
Yeah, Kanye West had said that Fiona Apple, Sleep to Dream from Title, was his favorite opening line to a song ever. And the line is, I tell you how I feel, but you don't care. I say, tell me the truth, but you don't dare. You say, love is a hell you cannot bear. And I say, give me mine back, and then go there for all I care. The lyrics.
She's here.
I fucking love her. And I was, this obviously made me start re-listening to some of the music. And I was really listening to another song of mine that's very underrated, Daredevil.
Yes.
From her last album. And she's really just a sort of, I've used this word already, visceral songwriter who sort of goes there with the content in the way that you want artists to. You expect like novelists, playwrights, you know, to go to this level. Stand-up comedians, which is so interesting that she had so much to say about Louis C.K. She had basically said that after all of Louis' scandal came out, you know, about his sexual harassment of women, other comics, etc., she thought that someone as smart as him would be able to be self-reflective and sort of really mine the sort of darker parts of his psyche to address how he had been abusive. Unfortunately, she realized that Louis C.K. wasn't capable of more severe self-scrutiny and that he's useless. As she says, I shake when I have to think and write about myself. It's scary to go there, but I go there. He is so weak.
I love that because it's so, I think, true to her experience. When you listen to her music, it does feel like an exorcism of some kind, you know, like actually mining things that are uncomfortable and deliberately so.
So young on the album Title, and I loved the part where Amy Mann talked about how it felt revelatory seeing someone so young talk about being raped, just like in her lyrics, and like how the profile draws a direct line to how other women in music feel comfortable doing that now.
Mm-hmm. And I think Tori Amos deserves credit for going there as well on her first album, Little Earthquakes. But and by the way, I just want to say also about Tori Amos, another person like Fiona Apple, watch every interview they've ever done, because you are introduced to somebody who is not like anybody else, not trying to be quirky in any way, and you slowly realize you could not have made this person up, and they are brilliant, and they are bizarre, and for that reason, you constantly are in awe of them when they speak or when they perform.
Yeah, she had this great interview with David Marchese in Vulture, I think, like 2017.
Yeah.
Even for me, you know, as all of us, as people who care about comedy and kind of the art of it, however, you know, narcissistic that may sound, I expected more from Louis C.K. as well. And it opens up that conversation of redemption and where men can be redeemed if they're willing to go and do the work, like if they're willing to delve within themselves. Of course, it only would be redemption to a certain degree, but I think that everything that she said about him and what the work that he needed to be doing was entirely fair.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it so much on the show, the idea of men like Louis C.K., even for someone whose transgressions weren't as severe and prolific in numbers as in Aziz Ansari. You know, the fact that when they were confronted with their transgressions, they just sort of were flippant about it, and so much of their comedy was, you're actually the problem for caring about this. It's stupid that I even have to address this. It was just talking about the idea that for a real artist, like if something truly painful has happened to you, you mind that for your art. And if you've done something truly painful to someone else, I would assume you would mind that as well.
It just also calls to mind how much conversations of cancel culture, et cetera, are smoke screens. How much they're not productive and they cloud the real traumas people have, and they cloud what is so disturbing about the facts of these transgressions, you know, how much we aren't discussing the things that could actually help us make us move forward.
Right. You talked about the Dixie Chicks last week, and it's like, that's real cancel culture, right? Like, essentially canceling three women for saying that Bush is a liar.
Right. And now, who thinks of him in any other context? You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about this quote she threw down regarding Paul Thomas Anderson, her former paramour, and Quentin Tarantino.
I'm still laughing.
So, for those of you who don't know, Fiona Apple had a 3-year relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson, and it's so weird to remember this now, just because I only think of PTA in the context of Maya Rudolph.
Right.
I'm assuming that he is obviously a much different person now, because I can't imagine Maya Rudolph putting up with that nonsense. But Fiona Apple says that in their relationship, he was coldly critical and contemptuous. And she described the fact that she and Anderson would recreationally use cocaine and ecstasy, but a night that was excruciating where they hung out with Tarantino resulted in her quitting coke. Basically, she was in Tarantino's house listening to him and PTA brag in a private movie theater. She said, every addict should just get locked in a private movie theater with Quentin Tarantino and PTA on coke and they'll never want to do it again.
Truly the most vivid image I have ever heard this year. You can picture how fast they are speaking to each other, probably referencing things like spaghetti westerns.
Yes. The lips moving. I can see wet, sweaty tendrils of hair just moving all over. I hate this image. I hate it. I hate it.
Because he truly talks like the Roadrunner without the aid of drugs,
right.
I feel like, and just like him on cocaine must be like, get me out of here.
Right. He's the cokiest celebrity we have, and it might have nothing to do with drugs. Yeah. No.
I mean, only because Cokie Roberts is gone, RIP.
Right. Yeah. She did have the mantle for a little while. Yes.
Also, I'd be curious to find out what night this happened. Like, what movie had they just released? Where are they at in their journey? Their Hollywood journey that is putting them in a place where they can speak like this.
Right. And also, you can just hear how ignored in the conversation Fiona Apple must have been as those two people cackled at each other about whatever, the career of Pam Grier or whatever
about
they were currently obsessed
Fellini.
With.
Fellini.
Yeah.
Fellini or
Fellini,
something.
Yes, right.
They broke up in the early 2000s, so I would assume that it was like pre-Kill Bill era Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
Yeah. But definitely Jackie Brown had been out already. So he was in the pop culture at the moment.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately, I do think we have to film a dramatization of this entire scene because I would watch it. It doesn't have to be long. 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Funny or die, get on
it. To be in it.
That is going to be my off-Broadway debut. I'm going to write that night.
Wouldn't put it past you. Or Jeremy O'Harris. I'm sure I could see it happening.
I know, right? He's probably already texting Fiona Apple. Let me write it. And she's like, Jeremy, stop texting me. How did you get this number? I also love her talking about her contemporaries, you know, people like King Princess. She's basically secluded in Venice Beach. I mean, she's already self-isolating. She doesn't seem like out of touch with anything, you know? She just seems like she is very aware of everything that's happening in the world, but like just choosing to live a tranquil moment.
I forget sometimes how much I require celebrities to announce which other celebrities they hang out with to kind of confirm that they're cool. Like when Kristen Davis and Cynthia Nixon post photos together, I'm like, okay, they're really cool people. They're like friends still, etc. So when I hear that celebrities still hang out, I'm mindful of that. And then I start thinking about who's left out. Like it seemed like Helena Bonham Carter didn't really hang out with the rest of the Ocean's 8 cast. Gosh. These are things I worry about.
Mm-hmm. The wall at your home is just filled with all their photos and yarn, and you're trying to figure out who spends time with who.
They all love Sarah Paulson. Mind. Yes.
If there's one last thing I could mention in this interview, two really interesting things. One, I love that the title Fetch the Bolt Cutters comes from The Fall. That Gillian Anderson.
Really?
Yes, it's a line that Gillian Anderson says in an early episode of The Fall, which is iconic. I love that series.
Irish drama, Jamie Dornan.
If you're looking to redeem
Jamie Dornan after the 50 Shades franchise, you got to go see The Fall.
Well, he's so hot in The Fall because he has a beard and they make him shave it and wear those ugly denim jeans all the time in 50 Shades of Grey. He's just so unsexy in it. Also, there is a depiction of Fiona's relationship with her ex-boyfriend in the profile, which is just so mesmerizing to me, just witnessing like her interacting with an ex and the way that Emily Nussbaum sort of is able to pick up on why they loved each other, but also why they are no longer together is beautiful writing. Anyway, I think I finally need to get Emily Nussbaum's book, I Like to Watch.
Oh, yes. I just love her in general. She's such a warm Twitter presence.
I love her writing. See, it was her Twitter presence that made me not want to read the book because I feel like she is so extra on Twitter. And I was like, I love your writing. And that's one person I was like, just write. You're doing the most on Twitter.
I'm just always so surprised when somebody who is clearly brilliant likes Twitter. I find it validating because the rest of us is just, you know, scrubs making our Timothy Chalamet
jokes. Shitposting. Yeah. And just posting anything.
Yeah. Well, not me.
Oh, that's right. Well, you're gone still.
She's gone still.
Are you coming back?
I have felt the urge to come back now that I'm just like in my home doing nothing. But I'm like, now is actually the time when I should be fucking doing work. So
it would
be pointless for me to come back now when I have so much more free time.
Yeah. When we're ready, we'll send for you.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
When
I mean,
you Lewis need
and I are
me.
Gonna secretly take bets out. We're gonna secretly take bets out, but otherwise I'm proud of you.
When you need me back on Twitter, just put up the iris signal.
I've never been angrier. Go on.
When we're back, keep it. We are back with the Keep It segment, our favorite of the episode as usual. Aina, what is your Keep It this week?
Hi, Ira. Hi, Lewis. First time caller, long time listener.
Uh-huh.
My Keep It this week goes to, and this is hard because one of our Wiley callers decided to take my Keep It today. So I'm scrambling to find a new thing to be mad about. But luckily, we're in the end times, so I'm always on edge. Concerning the coronavirus, I think. My Keep It goes to, you know what really had me uneasy? It's not the quarantining and it's not the social distancing. That I can get past. It's the new coronavirus marketing advertisements I'm seeing from large corporations that they're trying like to appeal to us while our defenses are down. And this was the first moment that life kind of felt like Orwellian. Like I was trapped in like Anthem. Like I was trapped in an Ayn Rand book. But Domino's had a commercial where they literally open up and it goes, don't freak out, because they know that we're all in a state of disarray that they can capitalize on. they're doing half off pizzas and free delivery and, you know, doing what they would do as a corporation who is struggling right now. But it feels so eerie.
Oh, word, yuck, though. Domino's is half off?
Yeah, heard. It feels so icky, and it may, I'm more so icky that, like, I really want to order Domino's pizza, but I'm by myself in an apartment, so I'll have to eat it alone.
I love it. Domino's, okay?
Well, maybe this is for you, Ira.
Listen,
they're appealing to you.
I know New York pizza is the best, obviously. I'm not dumb. And Chicago pizza is lit, too. However,
yes,
Domino's just hits that fucking spot.
They are consistent.
Yeah.
Also, I will say, the promotions you get from any whatever catalog you've ever signed up for about how their stores are closing now, and some company CEO is writing you an email, a promotional email that ends with always something along the lines of, "We're monitoring this situation closely." Girl, you're not in the lab. Don't tell me what's happening at the Pier 1 Petri dish station.
Cooking in the lab. Yeah. Go ahead, Lewis. What is your keep it?
My keep it is to something that, unfortunately, I will keep doing, but it is a keep it to working out at home. Have you ever sweat profusely in your own house? It sucks, particularly if it's your now jail that you live in, and then later you have to smell it the entire time and then treat it with more Lysol wipes that you're already trying to conserve. I'll say this. I'm somebody who routinely works out in a situation where LA models scream at me to do work. I prefer feeling like I'm doing minimum wage work for people who won the genetic lottery. That's how I gain a better body, you know? So what happens now is you download, say, an app that helps you work out at home and you do body weight push-ups, et cetera, off of furniture. One, that is just demoralizing anyway. Like the couch you were just writing, whatever, your Oscar-winning screenplay on, you now are gyrating at, like, it's 1981 and Jane Fonda just taught you you have hip flexors. It's so crazy to spend an hour manually exhausting yourself with nothing around you encouraging you. Nobody else working out, no other equipment you want to try, just you and your own body being exhausted. It is somehow humiliating to realize how hard you have to work on your own in order to get a tolerable workout. And it's like, yet there's no other option. Every gym is closed, rightfully so. They should be closed. But I cannot stand having to sweat where I live. It is a gross feeling. Mm-hmm. And if anybody has any other solution besides, not that there is a solution, it just sucks. It sucks. This is a sucky situation. And this is among the most annoying parts of it for me.
I have tried to work out at home too, and it is very stressful.
So yeah.
I get it.
And it's hard to keep going,
also,
too.
Also, my floors are concrete, so that's just not comfortable.
Ooh. Especially in, like, a smallish apartment. I mean, we're all in LA. We don't have that much space. Like, it's just, I don't want to be near my resting area while I'm not resting.
I actually have a lot of space in my home, Aida.
Okay. Okay, flex. Flex, girl. Flex. So I'm coming to stay with you then. Okay.
Not with you dying of consumption
sick
over there.
Yeah.
So my keep it this week is to Carrie Hilson.
Oh, yes.
Now,
oh, yes.
We all remember Carrie Hilson, nemesis of the Beehive, one-time R&B singer and songwriter who wrote a lot of really good hits and then just sort of decided to say that she thought Beyonce was trash and then just sort of derailed her career, to be honest. You should be able to speak freely in society, but, you know, not about religious institutions like the Beehive.
Don't be wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
People need to know, though, by the way, that once upon a time, you could not avoid the song Knock You Down. It was on all the time. It was the only song that occurred for the latter half of 2009, I swear to you.
Carrie Hilson hopped on Twitter recently to explain her conspiracy theory about how the proliferation of COVID-19 is linked to 5G wireless technology.
Mm.
Now I get it.
People have been trying to warn us about 5G for years. Petitions, organizations, studies. What we're going through is the effects of radiation. Why do you think the virus is not happening in Africa like that?
They don't have any technology whatsoever over there. All of Africa.
Does she...
Also, okay, I had thought Terrence Howard was the ceiling for crazy ideas, and she just went and got on a trampoline and jumped into the splits over him.
I was, one, so shocked that she had tweeted this, because I distinctly remember that her Facebook page seemed to have been taken over just by ads for years. Like, her Facebook page was always sharing like weird like fat diets or other sort of like spammy sort of ad things. I was like she is no longer in control of her social media.
Mm-hmm.
But these tweets were wild, and then she deleted them and wrote, "Management has asked me to delete articles and videos. I appreciate good discourse on unconventional thinking. Let's all just be safe out there, because whatever the cause, the virus is a real thing."
Wow. I'm so glad they let her near a dial-up modem to go and post that. It's not 5G serving that up.
We barely even have 5G in the U.S. She is a lunatic.
Where did she get that idea? I mean, I don't even want to know. There are plenty of places she could have gotten that idea.
Yeah.
Carrie Hilson's InfoWars.
Right.
speaking of, I have one other keep it to the introverts of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Far be it from me to attack them, but I am seeing far too many people with, you know, obviously, yes, everyone stay home, et cetera. You know, we came in to record this podcast safely. But, like, you should not be out congregating with tons of people.
Yeah.
Still being at bars and restaurants, like, if they happen to be open where you are. But there are some people who are having this sort of giddy, smug self-satisfaction of enjoying staying at home and being like, it's not that hard to stay home, do this, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm largely seeing it from people who never leave their fucking home in the first place.
Oh, I see.
On my timeline. So it's like, of course you were having a great time in self-quarantine. You're basically self-quarantined. You don't leave home.
Precisely. Yeah, I have
no social life.
I struggle to do this new life. So, I mean, first of all, don't make fun of me. I'll cry.
Yeah.
I'm someone who tends to stay home, and I still think that, like, you're right. That's very indignant. It's bullshit to be. Just recognize the introvert privilege you have, please.
There are a lot of people who are a part of canceling plans Twitter,
mm-hmm.
who are, like, extolling the virtues of staying at home. It's like, yeah, we know. You're always home.
And by the way, they're always spelling canceling with two L's. Guys, wake up. It's one.
Anyway, it's hard to stay home.
Yeah.
I want to be free. I'm a dancer. A dancer dances.
I'm not going to investigate that comment or what you could possibly mean by it, but I will believe you.
It's from Chorus Line.
No, I know. Yes.
Anyway, that's our show. Whatever.
Looks 10, jokes 3. That's what I have to say.
Yep.
Looks 10. Oh.
You get that.
Lewis, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Right. Think of the latter half of what I said, though. We should focus on that.
Yeah, let me really stress
that. Nope, didn't hear anything else. Didn't hear anything else. What an episode this was. I hope that something changes soon, because what else are we going to be talking about next week?
I know. Thanks, you guys, for bearing with us, too. We're super excited to get voice memos from you and hear what you're talking about. I hope we revisit that next week, too.
I mean, we probably will. We ain't going nowhere.
That's true.
They're not going anywhere. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seguin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.